3,100. 3,100. You ready? House Committee on Revenue for April 13, 2017 will come to order. Colleagues, we're going to change the order of our presentations today and start with the public hearing on House Bill 3,100. So we open that public hearing on House Bill 3,100. Christine?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3,100 does not yet have an amendment in all this, but it is planned that an amendment will be coming. But what the measure does, it imposes an additional tax on this certain type of income. Basically, it's investment services partnership income. And this is a type of income that's received by investment professionals. It actually comes from the interest that they accrue, but it's effectively a payment for their services. And so the income is treated as net capital gain at the federal level and is taxed at that preferential rate. And so the additional tax, the bill would actually recoup the additional tax rate, the difference between the federal marginal income tax rate and the capital gains rate into Oregon as Oregon income. And the measure is estimated to have a revenue impact of approximately $30 million in a full biennium. And this comes from the numbers from the national level and shared down to Oregon. The amendment would actually set more of a uniform rate difference for all taxpayers that was equal to the difference between the federal tax rate and ordinary income of 39.6% and capital gains income of 20%. So that would add an additional 19.6% for that amount of income into Oregon. And if the amount were to be treated as ordinary income at the federal level, the amendment would eliminate the additional rate on this type of income in Oregon if the federal policy was to tax this at the rate of the ordinary income instead of giving it the preferential capital gains tax rate.
Bravo. Welcome. Welcome back to the House. Thank you for coming.
Thank you, Chair Barnhart, members of the committee. I'm Kathleen Taylor, State Senator for District 21. I'm here today to talk about House Bill 3,100, a bill that takes steps to address the carried interest loophole at the state level and increase revenue. Currently, the carried interest tax loophole in the federal tax code allows hedge fund investment managers and private equity investors to declare as carried interest a percentage of their investment fee to get a lower tax rate. The returns from these fees, which can be sizable, typically qualifying as long-term capital gains, and as such are treated much differently and are taxed at a much lower rate than ordinary income. This essentially enables these private equity and hedge fund managers to pay a substantially lower tax rate, 20% instead of approximately 39%, which to me seems unfair. The bill will recuperate that federal tax advantage as revenue for Oregon, as it will adjust the rate, as Christine explained, is in the dash one amendment is not available yet, to 19.6%. So there would be an approximate 20% tax at the federal level and a 19.6% tax at the state level. Preliminary estimates from our LRO staff indicated that this could bring in $19 million in the first biennium and over $31 million in the 1921 biennium. From there, I'm going to pass it over to Mr. Warner to help answer any questions on the technical front. And I want to thank you, Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, and urge your support for House Bill 3,100.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Paul Warner, Legislative Revenue Office. For your reading pleasure, we did put in OLIS, the Joint Tax Committee publication. It's a little out of date. It's 2007, but this basic relationship that the Senator described, it still exists. It's a good detailed report. It's testimony they gave to the Senate Committee on Finance. And so it's a good explanation of how this tax preference works. And it's something at the federal level, there's been a number of proposals to eliminate it or to modify it, but nothing's passed yet. But Joint Tax Committee keeps track of it as a tax expenditure.
All right. Questions? Representative Bueller.
Yeah, thank you. Interesting idea. What would prevent these businesses, which most of them really aren't a brick-and-mortar business, they're sitting and making phone calls and on the computer from just moving out of state, considering our neighbor to the north and south and east don't have something similar?
Mr. Chair, Representative Buehler, of course, our neighbors to the north enjoy a significant income tax advantage relative to Oregon now, and with a 0% marginal rate. So you may see some adjustment in that case. But as we've said, in terms of most of tax policy in general, that's one of many factors that could affect location.
I've always been of the assumption that this was sort of esoteric for Oregon because the carried interest affects income produced in financial centers, primarily like New York and London and places like that. Any sense at all at this stage of what the business in Oregon is for the managers who might receive this kind of fee, carried interest, that would produce any income for us?
Mr. Chair, Christine has worked on the impact too, but as we've discussed, it's the impacts we have from the Joint Tax Committee are national. So obviously we're going to get a very small proportion of that. So we would anticipate that would be the case. We're obviously not a financial center, even really for the West Coast. So we've adjusted our estimates as a small proportion of what those JTC numbers are.
Mr. Chair, the JCT estimate, normally by population alone, would be shared down to 1.3% for Oregon. I actually reduced that quite a bit from that number to account for the fact that there's not a lot of financial centers in Oregon that we know about. And so I adjusted it to 0.75% of the national total, when just by population alone it would account for 1.3%.
And what does that give us?
That gives the $30 million in a full biennial estimate.
Okay. All right. And this is based on the idea that we would recapture the dollars that the federal government chooses not to collect based on this mechanism.
Yes, that's correct, Mr. Chair, and the amendment that Christine mentioned would impose that full federal rate differential.
Right.
Another option that we've thought about would be to try to capture those tax savings, mm-hmm. and make them an addition to state taxable income, and then impose Oregon's rates on that. If you were to do that, it would generate about half as much as what Christine's estimating from that 19% rate. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Or you could simply have an add back of the amount of the difference between the capital gain tax rate and the normal tax rate at the federal level, and take that number as an addition to the tax.
Yes, Mr. Chair,
you could do that
well.
I think, which would get you back to the original number, wouldn't
it? No, I think that would get you back to the original number. What I was suggesting was the tax saving to treat those as income rather than try to mimic what the size of the tax break is, and then apply Oregon's rates to that. So, as I say, that would get you about half of what Christine's current estimates
are. Let me ask one more question on this topic, then. Is this is a rate issue, I think. If it's a rate issue, then it is not included in the definition of income that Oregon follows. And so we actually collect our normal rate on the carried interest when the federal government only collects the capital gains rate. Is that correct?
That's correct, Mr. Chair. This is not a connection issue.
This is a very interesting idea because it basically obviates the value of a tax break at the federal level because you end up coughing that money up to the state. That is the opposite of any of the ideas I've ever heard of before. And I like it.
So, Chair Barnhart, if I may.
Yeah.
So we all have our hobbies.
And, you can explain how you came up with this.
So I read various things. And so I read about this in one of the many things I review and learned about this loophole. And policy-wise, the just because the federal government makes the decisions that they do of how they handle this income, we are not bound to make the same policy choice here in Oregon. So.
Well, and of course, if all of the states did what you're proposing, the feds would quickly repeal it because it just costs them money without producing a benefit for the fund managers that they were trying to benefit.
Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, if I may add that the obviously whatever decisions Congress makes in how their bills get drafted and what receives hearings and how things progress is something that I can't speak to, but I decided to go ahead and to do this bill because we need revenue here in the great state of Oregon. And I have some other bills that you also are aware of to try to bring revenue in. And this is something that I think would help address some of our revenue needs. And I also think that it's fair. I mean, I do think it's fair. Just because the federal has a different process doesn't mean that we have to follow the exact same thing in this set of circumstances. So.
Yes, thank you. Representative Smith-Warner, please.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Senator Taylor. Thank you, Dr. Warner. You almost took the words out of my mouth. I was gonna say, I think this is a great idea. I'm so glad you read all those things that I'm not quite as good about reading all of. And I think it's in a time when we are looking for revenue, I think it's a great idea. I think it's simple. I also think that it is progressive, which is what, which is the economist's goal, maybe, of taxing is to have fair progressive taxation. And so I just wanted to say, I think it's a great idea.
Good. Other questions?
Thank you. I was going to ask you what you read, but I changed my mind.
Thank you so much.
On
we appreciate
People magazine, it's probably not what it is.
Yes, sir.
Sure. Oh, excuse me, just a moment. Representative Benz.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. So in any of these different approaches to this interesting situation, do we find ourselves in the not needing a three-fifths vote circumstance, or is it always a tax increase? Mm.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Vice Chair, the way it's written now, it does impose a tax. So we're imposing a rate on this, making this calculation and imposing this rate on it. If you were to calculate it as an addition, so you're taking the federal tax saving and adding that, you know, you think about the, you know, your Form 40, you've got subtractions and additions. This would be an addition. Would be a calculation of what your savings were from this favorable tax rate at the federal level. That could be plugged in and made a part of your taxable income. Then you're broadening the base. And while I don't want to speak for council, I would think based on what they've said, that would not meet the imposed tax criteria.
Yeah. I was thinking that as you were explaining it. Another follow-up question. So I have not had a chance to review, and I've never studied this particular esoteric area. I'm tempted to say because I read other more interesting things.
People Magazine, well, National Enquirer.
Yeah, a lot of that.
This committee's getting altogether too relaxed. Representative Benz, please.
Moving on. I'm just curious, the original history of it seems to have something to do with deferred compensation. I did a bunch of those non-qualified plans years ago. I'm hoping, against hope, those people all passed away or some other thing has happened to them, so those plans are never called into question. But I do kind of generally recall the nature of deferred compensation and what the original idea was. Does this have anything to do with that, or is that completely just shouldn't be even on this table of contents here of the materials?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Vice Chair, that's why I would refer you to the Joint Tax Committee, Joint Committee on Taxation report to the Senate Finance Committee. That does go through the rationale in pretty good detail, but it's for a venture capital, you're putting a private equity capital, but the managers of those venture capital firms, they won't have much capital in it. they'll have a very small amount or not much in it, but they will make this whatever the transaction is that will increase the value. And so their input is really more labor or management, and yet that they get an equity stake in it. They get a percentage of that increase in equity value, and then that's what's treated as a capital gain rather than an actual ordinary labor income, which is really what they're providing. They're providing expertise, but they're also taking a risk. And so that's the rationale for
right,
it.
Right.
So it's really more of a, it's really, if you look at it economically, it's really management income.
Yes. Hmm.
So rather than capital gains from an appreciating asset.
Part of their fee is determined by the growth of the asset.
Yes, right.
Thank you.
Anything else?
Is there anybody testifying in opposition? I'm just curious.
You can raise that question when we have the work session.
I'd like to hear what they're. This is really interesting.
I suspect they don't want us to know who they are.
Yeah.
But all right. If not, we'll thank the those who have come all this way to testify on this important bill, and we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3100.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Senator. Appreciate your coming over to discuss this with us today. And we'll open the public hearing on House Bill 2876. Christine.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2876 would add a new top bracket of a 13% tax rate for income taxpayers with a taxable income greater than $250,000 for single taxpayers and $500,000 for joint filers. Currently, the top bracket is at 9.9%, and this would increase it to 13%, albeit at a little higher rate. And so the top bracket would not be adjusted for inflation under this bill in a similar way that the current 9.9% bracket is not adjusted for inflation.
Okay. Witnesses. Do we have any witnesses? No witnesses. Let me describe briefly what I think this bill is about. As you know, we're working on a plan that would change the way in which most businesses in Oregon are taxed, which would also have the effect of raising some significant revenue for the purpose of dealing with our budget needs as a state. If that plan is not finished, we are unable to pass it for whatever reason, then we need to be prepared to do some other things to raise the revenue necessary in order to pay for those basic taxes or those basic revenue needs. This is one option among many that could raise some of that revenue. And as I recall, when in Measure 66 we had a rate very similar to this for the first part of the time it was in effect. It was 11%, and now it this particular bill raises it to 13. It is a bill for raising revenue, isn't it? And it does indicate here that it requires a 3/5 vote majority. So we spent a lot of time talking about raising the top rate in 2009. Ended up with an 11% rate for a short period of time, and with a drop down to 9.9% later. And I'll simply note, colleagues, that 9.9% rate is lower than the top rate on a much smaller level of income was before the late 1980s, when the tax rate was 10% on incomes above whatever that number was in that time. So this is one of those ideas. Obviously, it's generated an enormous amount of interest and opposition, and so we don't have a whole lot to do. And with that, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2876 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2951. Christine?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2951 would require an addition and determination of the Oregon taxable income of any deductions for business expenses of compensation paid by a taxpayer to an individual that is deemed highly paid. And the criteria for whether an individual is highly paid is that they make more than 100 times the median pay rate of the company. And the measure would apply to property tax years beginning on or after January 1st, 2018. And so currently all compensation of employees is deductible as a business expense, and House Bill 2951 would create an addition for that amount that's currently deducted from income tax or corporate income tax.
Ah, bravo. Well, we have one witness, Marcia Kelly.
Chair Barnhart and members of the committee, Marcia Kelly, Oregon Women's Rights Coalition. I guess I'm here to be entertainment today. This bill in concept is a good idea. It's a little unclear the way it's written, whether it's a company or if it's the median salary of that group of occupations. I didn't read it as a company. I read it as sort of like the mean salary in, say, manufacturing, maybe in the area. But there are some problems with it. First of all, I think that the 100 times is a bit too high. Thomas Piketty, who's a professor at the Paris School of Economics and wrote The Capital in the 21st Century book, in talking in a news article about the Portland experiment, said, this is certainly part of the solution, but the tax surcharge needs to be large enough. The threshold 100 times should be substantially lowered. The other concern of doing this bill this way is being able to find what the mean salary is on executive compensation if the current administration in Washington, D.C. Messes around with the Dodd-Frank, because under Dodd-Frank, companies have to start reporting this year to the SEC on the ratio of executive compensation to workers. A simpler thing, I would think, would be to say, if you wanted to use the 100 times, just use 100 times the company's lowest paid employee. Mm-hmm. And would really sort of address something like that. From 1978 to 2013, according to the Economic Policy Institute, CEO compensation, inflation adjusted, increased 937%, more than double the stock market growth, and substantially greater than the painfully slow 10.2% growth in typical workers' compensation over the same period. And it's interesting that they found that the CEO to worker compensation ratio in 1965 was 20-1. And it's 295.9-1 in 2013. So there's been great growth in compensation for those at the top. There has not been as much for those at the bottom and in the middle. And those are the people who are struggling for affordable housing, to save for education for their kids, to pay off their student loans. So the concept is really good, but I think that to really fully support it going forward, I would need to have some adjustments made in the bill and clarifications on whether it's the actual company or whether it's the occupational group, whether it's based on Oregon salaries or across the country salaries and those sorts of qualifications. Concept good, execution not quite so good in my estimation.
Questions? I know, based on your proposal, your suggestion, if you paid $15 an hour to your lowest paid worker, something like what Oregon's minimum wage will get to, and you multiply that by a year's worth of hours, you end up with slightly less than $3 million. Times 100 times times those number of hours. Slightly less than $3 million. So that means that we wouldn't add this extra tax unless you were paid more than, well, $2.9 million. Interesting thought.
And interestingly enough, last fall, the Chair Barnhart, interestingly enough, last fall, the Portland Business Journal had a listing of the 25 top compensated public company salary or executives in Portland. Three of them were women out of the 25. And it started just at $3 million.
Above 3 million. So we're talking about above 3 million.
Yes. Thank and you. Went to 47.6 right. for total compensation.
Good. Thank you. Anyone else like to be heard today on this? Yes, sir. Please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, John Mullen, member of the Human Services Coalition Tax and Revenue Committee. I talked about this a number of different times in our committee about my own experience and our HISCO tax and revenue principles around fairness and looking at progressivity and who pays. I helped to create a public agency that I was director of for 22 years, and every year when I did the budget and our agency had about $100 million impact on the county every year by things that we did directly or services that we authorized. And when I would do the budget each year, I would take a look at the lowest paid full-time employee and compare it to my salary. And the difference was about 3.5 times. I made about 3.5 times more than the lowest paid employee. So I just offer that for consideration in addition to what my good colleague and friend Marcia has talked about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you. I'm on the board of at least one small nonprofit, and I think that's about the ratio between the lowest paid employee in that operation and the executive director in that range. Yeah. Thank you. Questions? Thank you very much. Appreciate your testimony. Colleagues, don't spend all of this extra time you have this afternoon all in one place. Be aware that we are not meeting on Monday. We will next meet at our regular time on Tuesday at 1 o'clock. Paul, anything else? Thank you. That means you have plenty of time now to work on your policy committees to get those bills out before the deadline. With that committee, I have to close the public hearing on House Bill 2951, and the committee's adjourned. No.